The Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions with Alex Levchuk and the Midweek Drivettes on Siren 107.3 FM, a 21st century radio programme with 23rd century philosophies.
Just another winter's tale. While I stand alone, a bell is ringing far away. I wonder if you hear. I wonder if you're listening. I wonder where you are today. Good luck, I wish you well, for all that wishes may be worth. I hope that love and strength are with you for the length of your time. Should the world take notice of one more love that's failed? It's a love that can never be. Oh, it meant a lot to you and me. On a worldwide scale, we're just another winter's tale. It was only just another winter's day.
Hearing loss, obviously essential when we're talking about the radio and indeed all sorts of human activities in so many ways, and to address some of the challenges that are being faced by the nation in terms of the continuing chronologically gifted nature of our environment. We're delighted to be able to welcome Professor Les Mayhew and Specsavers audiologist extraordinaire Charlotte Clements. Good morning, folks. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Les, if we can come to you first, this particular report, which is quite interesting because we're obviously aware of regular health checkups, regular eye checks, regular sort of dental checks and so on, but hearing is something we tend to sort of take for granted and probably wait until it's maybe too late before we actually start checking out our hearing, really.
Yes, that's right. Our health deteriorates as we grow older. As we know, the population is aging very rapidly. For example, nearly half of us will be aged over 50 by 2030, which was the time horizon we've been looking at. And one of the things that happens is that your hearing begins to deteriorate. And I was commissioned by Specsavers audiologists to look at what this might mean in terms of the prevalence of hearing loss and the implications of the cost of that to the UK economy.
I tend to prefer the term experientially enhanced as opposed to the O word, but either way is fine, equally chronologically
That's
gifted,
fine,
and
yes.
Another favourite. Charlotte, from your own perspective, in terms of, clearly, I mean, one of the things which bemused me a few years ago was surely Specsavers are all about the eyes, but of course you do hearing as well.
We do, absolutely. It's all part of that holistic viewpoint, so when people come in and get their eyes tested, particularly those that are 55 or over, Specsavers audiologists really recommend that they get their hearing checked at the same time, at least once a year.
And that's really where we lead to the Listen Up Hearing Loss and Ageing Society report from that point of view. Were you surprised by the findings that were coming out of this, Charlotte?
I wasn't actually, because when you look at the ageing population, you can see that with the way that people actually treat hearing loss, we've still got that stigma out there. There's people still saying, yeah, no, I don't want to do anything about my hearing. People think I'm old, they'll think I'm deaf. So the actual findings that Les revealed did not surprise me at all. It's something that people will live with for sort of 7 to 10 years before really doing something about their hearing. So, yes, nothing surprising there for me.
Les, there is a feeling certainly amongst some folk around today that one of the byproducts of the headphone culture in which we tend to exist across the base seems to be a kind of deterioration in terms of hearing. And clearly, back in the day, there was notion of attending loud rock concerts and various other factors. Is that also possibly something that kind of impinges on the sort of report here, that maybe, you know, we haven't been looking after our ears quite as well, or our hearing, shall we say, quite as well in the early years?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because the people coming through now who are in this older generation, by the way, I should say that with pension age possibly going up to as high as 70 by 2030, that will only increase the problem. But the people coming through in these generations would have been a lot of them would have been working in heavier, noisy industry. They may have been in the military, which is renowned for hearing loss as well. But I think what you're saying is that now those jobs have gradually disappeared, they might be being replaced by other forms of hazard or hearing damage, one of which could be loud music. So that's in the pipeline at the moment. Now it's starting to occur, but I don't think it's the major cause of hearing loss in the current generation.
Oftentimes there's the notion that when you go to the cinema, if you feel that there's a lot of mumbling going on and you can't quite hear it, is that one of the signifiers that maybe the hearing isn't quite as acute as it once used to be?
That's definitely one of them. Probably one of the most popular ones that we tend to see when we're consulting is the TV's going up or grandchildren can't be heard. They're normally dragged in by a significant other that's been living with the hearing loss as well. So it doesn't just affect the person with it. It affects their relatives, it affects their children, their grandchildren. So, yeah, there's lots of signs that it's starting to deteriorate, but it's only really when it gets really significant or starts to cause an issue that somebody will start to do something about it.
It's perhaps worth noting as well that with digital technology and so on, the days of actually having one of those large hearing horns that we often saw in various cartoons and so on, that they've kind of gone. It's not necessarily a kind of a major intrusion in terms of actually enhancing your hearing.
Oh, absolutely. The days of the big beige banana that we used to see and the body worn has definitely gone. Technology is so advanced. In Specsavers, we also use video otoscopy. So this is taking a picture of the ear so we can actually start to monitor what the inside of the ear looks over a period of time. And hearing aids now are so very, very small and discreet that if vanity was the issue to doing something about the hearing loss, then we can get well over that.
It's amazing how we can tap into the tympanum, to use a catchphrase. But let's return to Les again briefly. In terms of any action that employers can actually take to ensure that they can retain older workers who may be experiencing hearing loss, would you actually say that maybe you should recommend going and having a hearing checkup?
Well, it's certainly something that needs to be done, because the stats show that people with hearing loss in this over 50 age group are less likely to be in work than people without hearing loss. We don't know whether there's a direct causal link between those two stats, and certainly the data also show that women are more likely to be economically inactive, those with hearing loss, than men, which is quite interesting as well. So if there is a retention problem and it is due to hearing loss, then certainly employers ought to be very interested in taking action. They could do that in several ways. I'm sure Charlotte has a lot of thoughts on that, but free hearing tests in the workplace, somehow trying to reduce the stigma of hearing loss would also be very helpful as well.
Yeah, I think employers are really, really good at actively encouraging, say, the people that work with computers or VDUs to get regular eyesight tests. And it's exactly the same with hearing. We just want this same level of engagement from employers to encourage their workers to go and get regular hearing tests. And if anybody wants any more help or advice on that, then specsavers.co.uk/hearing will give people that help and advice. They can also book an appointment with their nearest store.
It's improving consumer professionalism. They're just easing into that website to go to for further information. Les, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say that obviously if pension age does go up to 70 and all the demographics point to that by 2030, there could be a gap of 5-6 years in which people would not be receiving their pension previously. They need to fill that gap. The income that they will not be getting until fairly late on needs to be filled. So they do need to consider working for longer. And so there's very strong incentive there, I think, both for employers and for individuals to take action. So I think that's quite a key point.
Well, perhaps also it's worth noting just quality of life is important, let alone the sort of notion of working for the system or various other bits and pieces. You know, just being able to appreciate the noise of life and the day-to-day experiences and to communicate. It's fairly essential. We don't realise just how important our hearing is, of course, until we start having challenges with it.
Well, that's right, because it's barely noticeable that you are losing your hearing, and that's why I'm sure Charlotte will endorse this, that you should get your ears tested from age 55
or over. Yeah, absolutely. Hearing loss is a little bit like a dimmer switch. It starts to get gradually and gradually darker, and then it's only when it becomes really significant that we do something about it. So just like Les says, those regular hearing checks can keep on top of that hearing loss.
It's been splendid touching base with your good selves today. Hopefully, if you've been listening to this either as a podcast or indeed live, you haven't had to turn up the radio set too much from that point of view. It's very important. But Professor Les Mayhew and Specsavers audiologist Charlotte Clements, many thanks indeed. Hopefully we'll speak again in the not too distant future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course, I could have gone into the mumbles that Richard Fitzwilliams is constantly saying is part and parcel of the challenge with movies like Dark Knight and so on and so forth. But I thought, no, Richard, it's all about hearing. That's the important thing.
No, it's not all about hearing at all. And indeed, while I was listening to that, I was longing to intervene to make the point that when you're in the cinema, I mean, the cinema has so many magical things to offer. But one of the problems in a lot of films and plays, by the way, most particularly on stage too, is certain performers do not project. It doesn't mean you're going deaf. What it means is that the dialogue, this idea that in normal life and conversation that you lose a certain amount of what pretty well everyone says, I think is nonsense. That even if it isn't nonsense, what we have is a right to hear what's being said on the screen, even if it's rubbish. The facts are we often can't.
But Richard, what else are subtitles for? Moving on.
Yeah, good idea in some films that are in the English language.
On January the 15th, 2009, 2 years after the Midweek Drive actually launched on Siren FM, the world witnessed the miracle on the Hudson when Captain Sully Sullenberger glided his disabled plane onto the frigid waters of the Hudson River. We know how it's going to end. Why would we want to check out the movie, even with Tom Hanks, Richard?
Absolutely what some people might think, and my answer to that is check it out. The reason I say that is because this is Clint Eastwood doing what he does best. He's got an American hero, a real American hero, an American sniper. Fine action sequences, to be sure, but a pretty dubious moral approach. Now, here you've got a fascinating story. It's a true story. It's powerfully and imaginatively told. The essence of this movie is the way it's edited, the way it's photographed, the fact that it, although you know what's going to happen, exactly, I agree with you. I mean, you know, there's no doubt except in the initial scene, which is a nightmare, and that'll shock to some extent. We then follow after this amazing incident where a U.S. flight lost both engines at low altitude, lower than any other jet in history, apparently, couldn't divert and had to land, as you say, on the icy Hudson River. The extraordinary way you saved all 150 passengers and five crew, and the rescue by the emergency services who were there and rescued them all in under half an hour, and he's hailed as a hero. But then the National Transportation Safety Board are skeptical the water landing was really necessary. They claimed their tests prove otherwise. He's under investigation. It's tough for his wife, Laurie, played by Laura Linney, and, of course, his co-pilot, Jeff Stiles, played by Aaron Eckhart, is under investigation with him. Now, the way Eastwood handles this movie is first class. Tom Hanks, of course, is the all-American hero. We know this in Forrest Gump and other movies. And, I mean, it fits him like a glove, this film. He's very much at ease in the part of Sully Sullenberger, and we'd expect that. But it's the handling, the superb aerial sequences, the rescue scenes, and the fact that it's extremely well done. Even if you know what's going to happen, and you do, tension is sustained throughout. You can admire some superb performances, you admire the aerial photography, the editing, and I found this absolutely excellent. It delivers exactly what it promises.
Moral of the story surely has to be, don't go travelling with Tom Hanks. If you see him on your passenger list, just flee immediately, whether it's Apollo 13, anything. The man's a menace, as President Obama has actually pointed out. You know, get into a situation with Tom Hanks, it's a disaster as a feat, you know. It's not at all.
You may get a disaster, and it's pretty freezing in the Hudson, but he saved them all. But this is a good movie. It's a very good movie.
Ben, you have a question.
Yeah, Richards, good morning.
Good morning.
I was wondering, from the film, does it sort of focus more on the pilot's private life, or is it more about the actual event itself?
It is almost entirely about the event. We do see Laurie very much left alone, angst-ridden. She does suffer from neuroses, and she and he are in contact, of course, during a period that is tremendously stressful, because a lot of this movie, he is focused on the inquiry and how they show through computer simulations. Well, it appears to show that he had other options, but with birds taking up both his engines, he most certainly didn't. So it is an entire experience, you could say, insofar as you can in cinema, as to depicting the extraordinary rescue and, of course, what happened and why he had to do what he did. So, of course, a lot of it is told in flashback.
Jewel in the Nile, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and, of course, the Back to the Future trilogy. Just three movies directed by the legend that is Robert Zemeckis. And now he's given us Allied, hasn't he, Richard?
Yes, Alex, he has. And I have to say, it's absolutely terrible. Now, what did or didn't go on between its co-stars isn't my concern. My concern is it trades on big names, but you can't excuse something as preposterous as this. I mean, the script's puerile. Some scenes are unintentionally funny. It's homage to the classic of Casablanca. Let's just pass over that because it's just stupid. Canadian airman, an espionage operative, Max Vatan, played by Brad Pitt, he parachutes into Vichy-occupied North Africa, and he and the intrepid resistance fighter Marianne Beausjour, played by Marion Cotillard, wonderful actress, of course, assassinate the German ambassador and begin a romance in England. They marry, and they settle just down the road here, just right here in Hampstead. But events conspire, no spoilers from me, they're all over the press, to threaten the foundations of their relationship. Let's be clear, this is a movie that is just silly. I mean, even in Casablanca, for example, where they make love in a car, that car is covered by sand in a sandstorm. They'd have had a hell of a trouble getting out of that car. It's the sort of movie where you see a German plane that's caught shot down by anti-aircraft fire over London. You know it's going to land in their garden, which it does. When Marianne gives birth, it's in a hospital in an air raid, and it's in the courtyard, and they make a terrific fuss about it, as they would. I mean, this is supposed, it's debated, to be based on a true story. I'm not going into the spoiler, because bad though it is, it doesn't deserve that. And I mean, avoid if you want to see it, what...
But he directed Forrest Gump and Castaway as well. He's an Academy Award winner.
I put it to you that the list of films does nothing to do with the excellence or otherwise of a particular film of the next film. And in Zemeckis, isn't he? He did Blood Diamond and The Last Samurai, didn't he?
He did. He also did Jewel in the Nile, which is surely sort of set in Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner.
We could run through the whole list of his films.
We could, but we won't.
Nothing. Maybe. Nothing. I put it to you, it has absolutely nothing to do with...
I'm just reminded...
You have Max, played by Brad. He's the type, for example, he can pop over to occupied France in a single evening, quiz a village drunk on a matter of identification, shoot some Germans, and come back in time to deal with urgent matters in England. Well, he can do what he likes, as he did in Fury, which had superb tank battles, but the facts were, shooting hundreds of Germans in the final scene isn't particularly realistic. And this movie is most emphatically not realistic, because Pitt is miscast, he's character under enormous emotional strain. There's a disturbing discovery, and he's at ease in the action scenes. He's very laconic as a hero, but he's unconvincing under pressure. Cotillard has to fight the script. She looks stunning. He makes an effort. But the plot's absurd. I mean, the Casablanca scenes, there's something about them. The fact they may have been virtually created isn't the point. The point is they're not convincing. The way characters behave in different situations when a character meets another character that they haven't met before, and the way they enter the German embassy, and when the national anthem's playing, people are talking, this sort of thing. I mean, you could mention endless scenes. Hampstead as a nest of German spies is wonderfully funny. I was laughing during a lot of this movie. It really, really is amusing. And no one's ever asked me to a debauch orgy on Hampstead Heath, I'm afraid. But there it is.
Your time may yet come, Richard. You know, who knows what could happen.
I've waited long enough. I mean, the fact is, it's inert. It's shallow. It's pretentious. It's supposed to, I were reading in the notes, it's supposed to hark back to Hollywood's golden age. Anyone can write that sort of blurb. The whole point is, it isn't a convincing movie. If a film of this sort, a sort of drama, espionage thriller, you could say, and I am avoiding spoilers, I'm giving it the benefit of, well, I mean, a decent review. The facts are that it is not a decent movie, and also the facts are that people just simply don't talk and behave when you can hear them. And there are scenes in Casablanca, they're whispering a lot, the two lovers. Well, I mean, what they say, I couldn't hear a lot of it, and it wouldn't be worth hearing when I was able to hear it when they got back to England. I mean, this is just a bad film, and one has to face the fact that you can reel off a filmography. You know, Alex, has got nothing to do with whether or not an individual film is good or not, and this is bad.
Well, personally, it carried
a beached whale.
Personally, apart from the beach whale, it carried with me a lot of resonances over Quentin Tarantino's Glorious or Inglorious, effectively.
But he was making a remarkable movie. I mean, there you had atmosphere. I mean, you mentioned a movie. Let's compare the two of them. Let's compare, for example, the half-hour sequence initially in Inglorious, you know what. And the facts are that you had this Christoph Waltz playing Colonel Hans Lander, this fastidious sadist who's the, in inverted commas, Jew hunter of the Nazis. I mean, and he goes to the farm of Monsieur Lapetit, who has is sheltering Jewish refugees underneath the floorboards, and the way the scenes are played, this is precisely what Tarantino does.
And you're saying that wasn't manifested, that level of tension, it hasn't been manifested by Robert Zemeckis and Brad Pitt in Allied? Strange. Ben,
not strange, because I think it was pretty unique, but this movie is a turkey, I warn you.
Well, turkeys, Christmas, surely festive season. Ben, you were initially quite taken with Allied, I believe.
I kind of liked it originally, Richard, and then you've just given this superb review, and I think now I've taken a U-turn.
Quite honestly, I mean, I was looking forward to it, because we haven't, I mean, let's face it, the Second World War has been pretty well, dare I say this, exhausted on screen, every single angle that you could conceive. From Allied to the boy with the striped pyjamas to the Innocents. I mean, those are recent or relatively recent ones. We haven't had movies set in World War II or many recently because, quite honestly, we've had hundreds.
And there's lots of other wars as well to choose from, let's be honest. Well, plus, of course, you could have 3D, you could have sensor round. There are all sorts of ways for war.
We've still got Dunkirk to look forward to as well.
If you've got miscast characters, and if you've got a director who's just fooling around.
Fooling around?
The Casablanca sequences, there's something about them that just simply isn't convincing. When they shoot the German ambassador, for example. I mean, someone who is worth shooting should at least look convincing. He looks plumb silly when he's making a speech. These sort of details, this is not a movie that pays the slightest attention to details. It's characters pop up as and when they're written in a script. And as for the Little's foray back and to and fro from occupied France, I mean, I was starting to laugh. But Hampstead is very funny. I didn't know that there were so many German spies in the area. I mean, this is wonderful stuff.
Well, there we have it. Time Out, effectively also a lead with What's Your Pleasure, a frothy spy romance or a grim World War II drama. How about both at once? Allied sets itself up as a modern-day answer to Casablanca. The early scenes are set in the Moroccan city under German occupation. And like the beloved Bogart and Bergman classic, it combines a star-studded love story with a dark depiction of betrayal.
Yes, I may add also, I was trying, apart from fleetingly,
Fans of old-school entertainment are unlikely to leave disappointed, according to Tom Huddleston.
Very, very...
Who paid him?
they won't. But and I'm in it. Anyone who goes to see a movie, I always hope he enjoys it. But the facts are, this is a bad movie.
Sully, Miracle on the Hudson, is that going to float your boat then, Ben?
Yes. It's a story
of... Float your boat.
Yeah, okay. But it's a plane. But exactly. I'll let you off. I've followed the story for a few years, even through those, you know, documentaries you see on TV and, you know, where they interview him. And I've always been fascinated by it, but...
But allies...
I tell you, you'll be interested that the great Sully himself and some survivors are interviewed, or at least appear, during... Well, climactically, in the movie, and it's a tribute to just an amazing feat of aviation. But this is a movie that's well made. It's well scripted. It's the tension is sustained, which is why I particularly liked it.
So you're saying Clint Eastwood better director than Robert Zemeckis? Let's not go there.
I'm not.
Do they?
I mean, I must say, if you compare their filmographies, and you've got a movie like Letters from Iwo Jima, and you've got. I mean, you could go through a huge filmography for Eastwood. Yes, I would prefer the two of them. Absolutely. Don't you agree? Let me put you on the...
I don't feel lucky today. I don't know whether there are four shots in the Magnum or five. Did you fire five? Did you fire six? Mm. Ben, last two questions for Richard, please.
Right, Richard. Have you enjoyed your 10-foot link with us this morning?
Yes, and also we've had two high-profile movies, one good, one bad.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Yes, look forward to it very much next week. I think we've got one of the movies is Birth of a Nation, which will be very controversial.
A hundred years since it first emerged with D.W. Griffith. And bring your own sheets, presumably, Richard.
That.
There may not be, but not today. In 1967, Michael Jim Delegatti came up with the formula of having two lots of everything: beef patties, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, and special sauce in one burger. One of the company's first franchisees running stores in the US in the 1950s, we're of course talking about the man who invented the McDonald's Big Mac burger, who's died aged 98. Just a moment's silence there as we actually sort of work our way through the process to another equally significant news story, because record breakers obviously go around the world, around the globe in so many magical areas. And of course, lots of people were turning up to see Blackburn Rovers perform last Saturday against Newcastle United as they attempted to actually have 10 consecutive wins in all competitions. Was it going to happen?
No.
They paid the penalty. Always mentioned Hull City as well. Oh, Lord. Oh, Ian Lennox, welcome back to the programme. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much.
You know, sometimes you just sort of think, did you really want to play Manchester United in the semi-finals of the EFL Cup? You know, surely it's, you know, you step away from that whole sort of scenario from that point of view. And I'm sure the good news is Brighton, of course, only 2 points behind Newcastle now.
Exactly. We're catching up again, Ian. We're very, very
close.
Yes,
as a week after I said, forget about Newcastle because they come in all the others, because Newcastle can run away with it. But I still think they will, but memory.
Although, admittedly, we only managed to scrape a win out of Fulham.
Yes, it won nothing down for most of it. I remember I was at the match at half time, you won nothing down.
Yeah.
We were 0-0, I think.
So, in terms of the whole Newcastle scenario, is it time to press the panic button? Is it a case of Benitez has lost the plot? We need to sack him and get somebody completely different in, like, for instance, Steve McLaren?
Yes, sounding like a tabloid newspaper man now, Alex. I mean, 12 games have won 10.
But
terrible.
But exactly, you know, the challenges will be raised in all sorts of other issues. Yeah. Anyway, life continues. He doesn't really want to talk about Newcastle games. I can see that.
There's a bit more stuff to talk about now in the recent lights.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we see all sorts of areas emerging in terms of the unsavoury elements, shall we say, of society and so on. I think we'll steer away from that. But any notion of Gareth Southgate now being awarded the job full time as England manager, Ian? Is it a case of he is the right man for the job, or is it a case of no, we're doomed?
I don't know. I think if you look at England's record recently, in the last, last few years, they've done very well in the qualifying games, but when they get the tournaments, they're absolutely hopeless. And strangely, he has got not all that much experience managing on a week-to-week basis, but what he has got, he's got extraordinary good experience at managing in tournaments, because he's been charged with England's setups for quite a while now, in the under-23s and that sort of thing. So that may be quite a significant plus. I just don't think England have got the players at the moment anyway.
Well, and of course, Portugal didn't have the players either when they actually won the European Championships a few years ago, but that's by the by.
Well, you can get, I mean, Greece won the European
Championship.
But you just don't know. I mean, it has to have the players to do the job, isn't it? I mean, sometimes you can do without the players doing the job, because you get a good team thing and team balance and stuff.
He's seeking redemption for the Euro 96 penalty miss. That's what he's doing. Seeking redemption. That's sorry to keep harping on about penalties.
We seem to lose on penalties all.
But, you know, how many times do Newcastle lose on penalties? Pretty much every time, actually.
Yep, that's true.
They've got to get it to penalties first, though.
I can't understand why I'm always on playing for England.
Well, there we are. You know, there are messages that come across there. Now, earlier in the morning, and it was very early, John Wenham was actually in the office, and he said, "Are you going to have another cracking show?" I said, "No, John, I'm going to give up on the whole sort of system." But clearly, cricket is one of the sort of key aspects that relates. Any views on England's cricketing experiences, Ian? Or again, do you think it's another case of, oh my lord, where are we going here?
I really don't know, I mean it's easy to say we've got India, they've got great spinners, we haven't, we're not used to playing spinners, etc. But the pitches in the three test matches haven't spun particularly much.
I mean we're now playing more and more
slam bang cricket, 20 overs cricket, one day cricket, which is totally different from playing Test cricket, as you know. And I don't think there's anybody like Jeff Boycott who actually, you know, decided he's going to build an innings, and that was it. Mm. They don't do that. Well, you've got Joe Root, who's probably one of the best batsmen brought through in the last 10 years. We've got the captain, who's very experienced but hasn't done all that much. We've got this young lad who's come through from Lancashire, who I think is, having watched him a few times now, I think he's one of the most startling talents I've seen in ages.
Are you a cricketer?
I remember watching Tendulkar when he was 17.
And you said Sachin's going to be a winner. Are you a cricketing person, Ben?
I am. I played it since I was 15, I believe.
And do you still play now?
I don't know. Not at university, but I used to play quite a lot, and still watch it quite a lot as well.
And were you more of a bowler, more of a batsman?
I was a wicketkeeper, but batsman, yes. I think 2020 batsman, if that's the polite way of calling a slogger. But I enjoyed hitting it. I absolutely loved the game. And although I think with England, what's quite difficult is I think they're just trying to find that balance. I don't think it helps not having the right players, because it's always changing cricket. The styles of cricket are always changing as well.
I mean, 20 over cricket has now become a different game to cricket.
Oh, completely. And I think as well, though, I think other teams, it's a bit like us in football, I think other teams are far ahead of us now, to the point where we're sort of, you know, looking around and wondering what the hell to do. I think it's normal then, usually. But they're quite inconsistent, England. They can either have a really good spell of about, you know, 6 months, or and then suddenly they'll be off track for another year.
We're doomed.
Yeah.
And once again, the sports team of the year in the Personality BBC Awards will go. Although how actually Andy Murray can be Sports Personality of the Year when he doesn't have one, I never quite understand. Still, never mind. I'm already predicting ahead.
He's quite right.
He is the greatest ever living sportsman in the entire universe, obviously.
Well, he's certainly our best tennis player ever.
Better than Fred Perry?
Yes, I would think so.
Good heavens.
He's certainly won more tournaments.
Yeah, well, okay.
It's been, what, 60 years, though, isn't it? Since we
won more majors. How can you compare them anyway over the distance?
Well, it's
must be getting a knighthood at the end of the year.
I'm always comparing Raish Carter with John Joe Shelby. Oh, he's missed another penalty. Sorry, just Raish.
Although you still have those cyclists as well from the Olympics. The couple's name, is it Laura Trott?
And her husband. Yeah. Laura Trott and her husband.
Yeah, you think of the medals they won. It's exactly. It'd be impossible to not get recognised.
Can I just go back to Andy Murray? What I think is the most incredible achievement on his part is that he's come to excel in a sport where historically the coaching in this country was abysmal. Until recently, I don't think we produced a top man, a male player. It's probably all down to his mother.
Yeah, it's down to the fact.
Yes, it is down to his mother, because she took him off to Spain.
Exactly. And there we have it. You've been listening to the sports commentary slot here on Siren FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. Listen, we can't do sport without saying, where are Lincoln? Top of the league.
Good. What are they?
Top of the table. Top of the league.
Win against Wrexham, isn't it?
Win against Wrexham, and they're in first position.
Do they still play in the red and white stripes?
They do. The Lincoln Imps, they still actually have a fanzine, which is called The Deranged Ferret.
Do they have blue shorts?
Those blue shorts, astounding, really. But they are top of the Vanarama Conference, heading back. In fact, I was just doing a quick calculation this morning, thinking ahead to this. One relegation for Newcastle and two promotions for Lincoln. They'll be in the same league.
You do half dream sometimes.
Well, it's a thought. It's a thought. Speaking of dreams, are you ready for Frank Foster with Backroad Buzz, this week's Camo from Tilbury musical selection?
Yes, indeed.
Is Frank Foster providing a backroad buzz, or is it just a buzz kill? What's your view, Ian Lennox?
I quite like it. It's something dance to, isn't it? So I can't dance, so that's me, I suppose.
Neither could Genesis, but there we are. That was another tale entirely. If Doug Brown is listening, not that
he could dance in Genesis.
I Can't Dance was the title of a Genesis tune.
Oh, is it? Oh, I see, right.
Sometimes I just wonder, Ian, whether you actually keep it down with the kids as you pretend to in all so many ways, you know, sharing the joys of all sorts of things. I mean, if you did, you would know automatically that was the opening bars to Phil Collins, Mike Rutherford and Tony Banks actually saying, you know, the I Can't Dance number. You can't tell me this has never been played at St James's Park. No, obviously you can't.
I have noticed that.
Nice, exactly. Yes, from, of course,
that's Knopfler, you see.
Mark Knopfler.
Lad from Gosforth.
Exactly.
It's all right, though, Ian. I didn't know it either.
At the Lincoln Theatre.
Sometimes you can be quite proud of ignorance, can't you?
I wasn't born when that came out there. That's what's worse.
I was probably trying to claim pension.
The Lincoln Drill Hall from Friday the 9th of December until Tuesday the 3rd of January. That will be my birthday then. 2017, Beauty and the Beast. following last year's smash hit production of Snow White, which played to over 13,000 people, not all at the same time, broke all box office records. Beauty and the Beast is set to be the Drill Hall's most incredible pantomime yet. Glittering costumes, stunning sets, sing-along songs, dazzling choreography, jokes and slapstick. Could almost have been describing the Ian Lennox phone links on a Thursday morning. You know, that's the sort of line that's actually there. Of course, we don't really see the beauty of it because we haven't equipped a webcam for Ian's bathroom, kitchen, or wherever he happens to be.
Feeding
the cats, exactly. But either way, we will. Lincoln favourite James Campbell returns as the outrageous Dame Dusty Doorknockers. So everything's lining up to make this the perfect festive treat for boys and girls.
Very tongue-in-cheek.
It's way forward.
Is it a family show?
Well, tickets are £12 for adults in the early stages, and then actually if you just book your tickets after the 10th of December, they become £13. So Christmas wouldn't be Christmas without the Drill Hall Panto, a perfect festive treat for boys and girls, mums and dads, grands and granddads alike. Okay, Lincoln Theatre Royal, whilst we're into pantomime season, Cinderella is what's being focused at Lincoln Theatre Royal from Monday the 5th of December. That's this Monday. Good grief, it starts then. Oh, Lord. You can treat yourself and your loved ones to a fabulous fairy tale treat at the new Theatre Royal, starring Kerry Katona and Chris Johnson, the most magical pantomime of all. A highlight of the new Theatre Royal, Cinderella, in the winter season, will be performing there from the 5th of December until Sunday the 8th of January.
Just squeezing. I've got three dancers from pantomime staying with me at the moment.
Well, would you like to give them some name checks?
Aladdin.
Yeah, well, give them some name checks. Share the wonderment of who they are so they can actually sort of, you can add a few pennies to the rent you charge and say, I've been promoting you on Siren FM.
There's Jessica.
Yes.
Shane, mm-hmm. And Charlie. Well, she's Charlotte, actually. But well, they're all lovely, actually, lovely
Jessica, family. Shane and Charlotte. There we are. Yeah. Three dancers performing in Aladdin.
Charlotte plays a bigger part as well.
Well, all parts are big. It's the sort of the casting directors who can sometimes be small. There's some sort of paraphrase that we work through on that basis. But that's at the Theatre Royal Newcastle?
No, it's at Whitley Bay.
Oh, Whitley Bay. Yeah. Now, there's a name I hadn't expected to actually utter at this time of the day, it being 11 minutes to 9 o'clock on Siren FM. Whitley Beer, to actually give a little accent there.
Never heard of it.
Spanish City. Spanish City in Whitley Beer.
It's a big resort for the Scots, or used to be, and it's got a lovely beach.
And the Spanish City, which is being refurbished.
It's been refurbished,
yeah. I'm looking forward to checking out Whitley Bay in sometime in 2017 with the totally refurbished Spanish City.
You're very nice to me. I'll send you a picture.
Oh, did you see? This is. There's just no end to the Lennox.
It'll be a still picture because I don't run the big budgets.
No, it's the Lennox largesse. That's what I should say. It sort of opens up a whole range of things. Although none of our other midweek drivers, such as Tessa Snott, Hannah Brown, or indeed Martina Vieca, any of them have actually sort of been able to actually get up this morning in time.
Really?
I know.
Only me.
How are Ollie and Obo?
They're fine. I haven't seen them. They're out at the moment, but they'll be coming as soon as they turn the kitchen light on. They're in because they can see the breakfast.
Although technically, right. if we are actually doing the line yourself, Geordie proper, oot and boot.
Oot and boot.
You repeat after us. Play the podcast back. You'll work our way through. That's one of my challenges to actually ensure that John Wenham will actually start, learning Geordie. I think it's the next stage in his career development when he's not actually. But in fact, I'd like to see him put the entire.
Can I ask who John Lennon is? I presume it's not the John Lennon.
No, John Wenham. John Wenham.
Wenham. Oh, right.
Yes. Easily confused,
I thought you said John Lennon as well.
Did he? Yeah, it's an enunciation, isn't it?
Weak, clearly.
Every time Manchester City win, he gets excited.
2-1 against Burnley can't be bad. That's the important
Burnley,
yeah, but no one loses to Burnley.
Ooh, Liverpool.
Although I watched the Man City game, and to be honest, I think Burnley could have had you easily.
Did they?
They were quite dominant in the first half.
I mean, say 2-1 against Barcelona, and people listen, don't they?
Four one against Barcelona, I think you'll find. Let's not argue about the issue. Let's progress positively through the whole system. As I said, the objective is, can John Wenham produce the events diary in Geordie before Christmas? The challenge is out there. I wonder whether they arise to it.
I used to, when I was in working in Manchester, I used to sort of do go into sort of Passport Geordie. And one of my party pieces was, "Hoi, hoi, hoi, your hammer, where are you?" That's Harold, would you mind passing your hammer to me?
Brilliant. These are the kind of messages that the world has actually found.
It's a bit like the Yorkshire tin, tin, tin. Is it tin, tin, tin or something like that? Put it in the tin.
Tin, tin,
it. I don't know.
It could well be. But I feel as though somehow we've gone off script and we still actually have to feature...
A sports feature talking about how people talk.
Exactly. I know. It's astounding. Goal, eat my shorts. Sarah Willingham will be joining us very shortly. Small business of the year in London, Ian. Skinny Dip London. Skinny Dip London. What do you think that might be about?
People going naked into water?
My thoughts exactly. No, it's a fashion accessories brand which topped off a record year by scooping the coveted Small Business of the Year award at the 8th annual Nectar Business Small Business Awards, hosted by the aforementioned Dragon's Den star Sarah Willingham. Two brothers formed it, James and Richard Gold, together with their friend Lewis Blitz. I just think Lewis Blitz, if your name is Lewis Blitz, you've got to actually sort of be a bomber of some sort of nature. No, that would just look good. Last two questions for Ian, please, Ben.
Ian, have you enjoyed your tennis breakfast this morning?
Yes, I have.
And will you be joining us again very soon?
I do hope so, when Newcastle have won, and I'll be able to get my own back on him.
One day, little girl, the sadness will leave your face as soon as you've won.